This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You can go to BetOnline, use the code BELIEVE, B-L-E-A-V, to get yourself a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Maybe you don't like betting for your Washington Commanders. Maybe you need a little emotional hedge bet somewhere other places. Maybe you don't like Joel Embiid and you want to bet against him and get the 76ers out so Harris can focus on the Commanders. All that is going to be right at your fingertips at BetOnline. NBA action, NHL action, baseball. The Nats are, I feel like they're looking good, and they play fun baseball, even if they lose a game 7-1 like they have just recently. But you can bet on the Nats. You can bet on golf. It's all right there at your fingertips. All of your up-to-date wagering and sporting news. Just use that code BELIEVE, B-L-E-A-V, to get yourself a welcome bonus, 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet online, where the game starts. We'll be joined by Joe DeLeon here in the game here to talk about Washington's 2024 NFL draft. You can catch Joe on his own programming at Hack City Football right here on YouTube. He is Believe Network's premier college and NFL draft analyst. I believe Stoner is working behind the scenes to make sure that Joe is good to go because we know he is on a tight schedule. So, let's get started with this draft. This was something that we really, really, we felt pretty good about. And yeah. I'm eager to see Joe's thoughts because, even though you're a pessimist and I'm an optimist, a realist. Okay. So even though you're that, even though you literally just finished a 30-minute rant about malpractice, you like this draft. You think that the players that Washington got in this draft are fantastic. And so yeah. I really want to kind of take a look from an outside perspective. If you, who is normally a hater, is liking this, and me, who sees the best situation ever for the team, likes it, and CBS, the only A+, to be given out on CBS. And everybody's raving about this draft for the Washington Commanders. Adam Peters knocks it out of the park. Well, let's hear from Believe Network's own Joe DeLeon to see what he thinks, as he is an expert at this draft analysis. Joe, thanks for joining us here. Again, we've been pitching your Hack City Football on YouTube. Forgot to mention, though, Joe, is you're the Rhode Island long snapper. Washington cut one and signed one in the offseason. I don't know if you're in football shape, but that might be a position battle you could win.
Yeah, I admittedly, I'm like 80 pounds under my playing weight right now. I used to be so much heavier, so I don't think I could take that phone call right now. But for some reason that Cameron Cheeseman situation has been something that I've been asked about a million times, because it's insane how weird it was, where he basically made the comment, "I'd cut me too." And there's some truth to that. It is a cutthroat position where if you don't play well, you're getting booted. There's one guy on every roster. So it kind of just works out like that. It's funny that he called his own firing, though.
Yeah, it was a rough situation for him. And Washington fans, we liked the guy because he was very affable, very likable. But, Washington, Ron Rivera traded up into the 5th round to get him. And then he had just 2 okay seasons, and then that disastrous season that led to him being cut, where people couldn't figure out what was going on. So he's not here. And Washington, thank goodness, did not move up to draft another long snapper this time. What they did do, Joe, is what we feel is a pretty good draft. Now, you're on the outside, and on your Twitter bio, you say you probably hate our favorite team. So how do you feel about Adam Peters and these Washington Commanders?
Yeah, I think that, first of all, they needed to – they're one of the few teams that I think were removed from the conversation of trading back and acquiring picks. They needed to get their quarterback situation figured out. This is a team that has not had a steady hand at quarterback in such a long time. So for them to get Jaden Daniels, who I think is the best fit for Cliff Kingsbury's offense, is amazing for them. I think, and right now he's my pick for offensive rookie of the year. I think that because he is such a good athlete, he is going to rush for a ton of yards. He's going to throw for a ton of yards, and that is going to be enough for him to lead the award. I don't know if the Commanders necessarily get to the playoffs like CJ Stroud got his team to the playoffs, but he is just the type of guy that is just so gifted as a playmaker who I wasn't bought in on originally, and I totally see the vision now. He is going to be great for this Commanders team. I think where I draw my attention to in the rest of this draft class is them finding value with the rest of their picks. I loved that they took Jerjon Newton and that they were not going to overthink that selection. Seemingly other teams were, because other defensive tackles that I don't think are nearly as good as him were selected over him. And the Commanders don't really need defensive linemen. We know that their interior group is the best unit. But now that we're adding Newton, who is the most disruptive, in my opinion, defensive lineman in this class, he is impossible to keep up with when he is cooking, and he's going to help free up so many other players. To add him into the mix not only boosts the level of the unit, but it also could potentially create opportunities to free up cap space if you did want to move on from Jonathan Allen or Daron Payne at some point in the next couple of years. You're not hamstrung by any of that. And then on top of this, Mike Sandstrill is a quality corner for them, one of the more underrated players that was a bit of a late guy that was loved by the general overall national media. I loved that they took Ben Sinnott from Kansas State, who is very physical. He's got that hard nose, grinding into the ground type of mentality, but is also still a very good receiver. I think a lot of people pigeonhole him as this H-back, but he's got the frame and the build and the athletic traits to be a good starting tight end in the NFL, and that's a position that certainly needs to be figured out. And then the last one that like caught my attention was Jordan McGee, the Temple linebacker. He is a huge work in progress. Like, he needs a ton of help in terms of getting to a level where he's going to be a competent playmaker and a competent defender. But at the very least, you're getting a really good special teamer, because he's really fast. He's very, very athletic.
Let me kind of push back a little bit on going back to Johnny Newton. I'm one of those guys who overthought it. Not that somebody, a different defensive tackle, should have been taken in front of him. But my issue with him is kind of some of the things you said, right? John Allen's there. Daron Payne's there. They're already strong at that position. And to use that kind of draft capital just because it's great value doesn't make a lot of sense to me, because you're choosing him over, you're taking him at the expense of somebody who can help you a little bit more in positions that they absolutely need, like a left tackle or whatever. So are you saying that you just kind of believe, just in general, that BPA, best player available, is usually just a better strategy than going and getting somebody you need?
I think that when you have a weak roster, no offense, Commanders fans, when you've got a lot of roster holes and you're just looking for athletes and you're trying to improve and you're trying to get better, best player available, I think, is always should be the approach. If you're trying to reach, if you're trying to make moves based on positions of need. And I think at that spot, there were some tackles worthy of the conversation, like Roger Rosengarten or Kingsley Sowamatea, maybe worth the conversation. But for a guy who I think most of the NFL had graded as a top 25 pick, but seemingly what may have scared them away was some injury stuff, some personality stuff. That was the only reason for it. Yeah. For him to fall that far and be available for the Commanders, I think is a huge get. I also think for something like this, it's a unique circumstance. This isn't like you had Newton and you had a tackle with the same grade. They were ranked one right after the other. And you said, you know what, we're just going to take Newton because he's ahead of them. I think this is a spot where most teams, except for the few that picked ahead of them, decided to pass on him and still had a really good grade on him. And it's just the opportunity it presents itself. I think this is going to be one of those picks where, and I can understand it, there's going to be frustration from Commanders fans. In a couple of years, maybe even just after this year, I think the attitude is going to be a lot different.
Yeah, I'm excited about Johnny Newton. Now, there's a couple different interesting things there. You're talking about the teams ahead. It went wide receiver at the top of the second round. But the Atlanta Falcons, bizarre draft from them regardless with the Penix at 8 pick. But they took Clemson defensive tackle Aurora Horro. Why was Newton falling that far? Like, I know Adam Peters said he was surprised that Newton was available. And I did see, I did some charting where Newton was looked at anywhere from 11 to 25. Why did he fall to Washington there at 36?
I don't have the full context on it, but like what I had heard loosely is just that he was rubbing some folks the wrong way throughout the pre-draft process. And like, I don't have, again, the full context of like what he did that scared some people away. But for whatever it was, he just was somebody that during the interviews, some NFL teams thought, maybe let's not invest in this guy in the first round. Let's maybe not grab this guy. I think Rukaroro Roro going before him, though, was the example of the Falcons not having a very good board this year. They're easy to criticize because of some of the other decisions that they made. But they had a lot of picks that were way against the grain. And they've been a team in the past couple of years that have overdrafted traitsy players like Rukaroro Roro, and those players necessarily have not panned out. So
now's the time to save 30% on wedding jewelry, only on BlueNile.com. Make sure your wedding ring is the one with your pick of diamond and lab-grown diamond bands, all hand-finished and graded for excellence. Or surprise her with something blue she'll love for life, like a stunning pair of sapphire earrings. Blue Nile's jewelry experts are available 24/7 to help, from fit questions to style advice. Right now, get up to 30% off at BlueNile.com. BlueNile.com.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
I wouldn't really count their decision-making in line with how it could affect the Commander's decision-making.
Yeah, once again, we're joined here on Ref the District by Joe DeLeon, who is part of the Believe Network. He's a college football and NFL draft analyst. Joe, let me ask you about pick number 100 for Washington. It's the guy who I think was their best pick in the draft, and that's Luke McCaffrey from Rice, the wide receiver. He's a big receiver. He's a fast. He's a physical. He's obviously the bloodlines are there with the McCaffrey family and all. Is this a guy? I think he's going to start right away in the slot. Is this a guy who is going to be somebody who is going to make some of those other guys, we're going to forget about some of those other top wide receivers, or is he just kind of a guy who's going to fit in?
I think he's more the guy that's going to fit in. I think he's going to be a really good special teamer. He's somebody that you want to put on punt, you want to put on kickoff, kick return, all of those things. I think, and it happened with Brendan Rice, it happened with Jeremiah Trotter Jr. Some of these guys that have these NFL bloodlines, that stuff's certainly important. You know, it's easy to find success with guys that have NFL players in their family, their fathers, their siblings. Those guys tend to work out because they have a similar work ethic, all that stuff. But he's not the same player as Christian McCaffrey, which I don't think there's that expectation that he will be. There's certainly upside though there. You know, I think that you're definitely, as it sounds like you're recognizing, the upside is there. He's not somebody who's going to come in day one, be an early contributing starter. But in a couple of years, he has the tools, the frame, the traits to maybe become the third receiver on the roster. We've seen guys like him find success in the NFL, and it's certainly possible. His dad was a great, big, strong receiver, and I think that we could, you know, totally see that happen with Luke McCaffrey. But at the very, very least, and why it is a good pick, where you took him in the third round, you're going to get a really, really good special teams guy.
Yeah, I was surprised, maybe because I just always envision his brother Christian as a shorter running back type that Luke, you know, comes in at 6'2". So Washington fans wanted a big wide receiver. We end up getting that one. There were some other targets they wanted. There were a lot of offensive line targets. You mentioned, you know, taking Newton over some of those targets that were available at 36. Washington was back up at 40, and Doug would like your opinion on Washington trading back from 40. I know you love Sanistrill when we picked at 50, but that was an opportunity Washington could have taken a tackle at that point if they wanted to.
I'm always an advocate for trading back in the middle rounds, especially when you're a team that is just trying to fill out your roster. I think that trying to get too caught up, as I kind of alluded to earlier, trying to get too caught up with addressing specific team needs, it can kind of trap you in developing your class and putting together a good class. So I'm always in favor of the trade back. What were the exact assets that they got from it? Because there's obviously so many trades, it's hard to remember every single one.
That would be Sanistrill and Sinnott, right?
We end up getting, we took 50 and 53. So we ended up with 2 second round picks, but we had also given them 78 in return. It ended up being a wash, essentially. Is like, if you look at like the draft calculator, trade calculators, Washington got minimal value out of it.
Okay. Well, I mean, for them to end up, did they originally have the 2 second round picks? Is I think the better. Okay.
So they had 36 and 40. And then what they ended up doing is they dropped back from 40 to get 50 and 53. And they moved one of their third round picks to do it. So they ended up with 3 second round picks rather than the two that they originally had. And then they picked 50 and 53. I also want to note, for everybody who wants an offensive tackle, all of those tackles were still on the board when they picked Mike Sanistrill and Ben Sinnott.
Right.
So I know I love those picks, but I just want people to understand they didn't want those tackles who were available at that point.
Yeah, and there were tackles also still on the board, like way at the end of the second round. Like right, Roger Rosengarten is the one that pops in my mind, who and Kingsley Somatea, they both ended up going much later than I anticipated or would have willingly taken them.
63.
Yeah, so it's not like that they took Sanistrill in priority over those tackles. It clearly the priority was best available. If we pay attention to a lot of the way that they picked in some of these rounds, and them getting Brandon Coleman, I think doesn't really answer having a starting player. He's more of a swing depth piece, in my opinion. But for them to, you know, for there to be any fear of them not trying to address tackle to go after those guys, you're still getting two starters. You know, that at the end of the day, if you get two guys that you're confident in being starters, that's what's most important.
So Gus here from our audience is chiming in. So Washington traded away 40, 78, and 152 to get Philadelphia's 50, 53, and 161. Cooper DeJean was Philadelphia's pick, and then Washington comes out and takes Mike Sanistrill with the pick 50.
Okay. I don't think it's bad strategy for them to have ended up with those 2 second rounders. I think it worked out for them considering that they ended up with Sanistrill in Sinnott.
I do love both of those picks as well. I think those are a couple of guys who are going to be starters right from the jump and are going to be here for quite a while, especially when your starting tight end is Zach Ertz, who it gets hurt, and I think he's about 53 years old, somewhere around there. He's an old dude. But let me ask you, Joe, a little kind of off topic just a little bit, but the state of college football. I know you're a big college football guy, and you follow it everywhere. I have kind of this idea in my head that in about 10 years, there's not going to necessarily be college football. There's just going to be like minor league football that's just associated with colleges. So there'll still be Alabama football. They'll still play for Alabama, but they'll just be minor league players getting ready for the NFL. Don't even go to school or anything. How do you kind of see the way things are going with paying players and guys transferring basically almost as often as they want? What's the kind of the story of college football for the next 10 years?
Yeah, I think that there's a lot of work that needs to be done, and there's a lot of lawsuits that are really shaping the direction that things are moving. And the most pivotal right now is the House versus NCAA case that's occurring. And right now they're progressing towards a settlement in that case. And that, I think, is going to shape how things are going to look. That is probably the precursor for revenue sharing, creating some sort of a cap space, if you will, for these programs and how they're going to be able to pay players directly and have school directed NIL for these programs. I agree in the way that you're saying it. I wouldn't necessarily classify it as minor league. I think that we're going to have some consolidation and some teams drop off just because programs like Stanford probably wouldn't benefit them to keep football around financially. And they've even toyed with the idea of cutting other sports. I don't really see it making sense for them to continue to have football, but we're going to progress eventually towards less programs. I think there's going to be less transferring because part of what would be a collective bargaining agreement would be saying, all right, if you sign with a school, you have to stick for 2 years, you have to stick for 3 years. There's going to be a certain time frame for those contracts. But I think that we definitely are playing towards that where it is going to be more professionalized. And I think that's good for the sport. I think that once we entered into the NIL era, it has created an unfixable mess. Before that, college football was great. I think that we all love that version of college football, but because of unforeseen circumstances and the way that these court cases have handed out, it has become a huge, huge mess. So the only way that we fix it is professionalizing it, having a revenue share, collective bargaining, all of that stuff. And it's going to a way look like minor league, but I think the product is going to be so exciting that I wouldn't really consider it to be, you know, minor leagues.
Yeah. I think a lot of people are so focused on what college football used to look like, but I think you can actually track back to the 80s where things started to change, right? Where we started, it became less about, even though NCAA always talked about student athletes, it became less about student athletes and more about the revenue that was coming in through sporting programs. And that started being kind of the focal point, and it just kind of steamrolled now to 2024, where you have, you know, this is a $1 billion organization and you have 18 and 19 year olds that are your workforce that aren't seeing that kind of money. You know, back in the days, the 80s, the 90s, I don't know how many old used cars did you sell there, Joe? Because that used to be the thing, right? And I think that once we shift into what it could be, this kind of the semi-pro, you know, the minor league type situation for the NFL, I think people will see that it's still exciting. You have people who watch this spring, you know, football, right? XFL and USFL are not, you know, doing fantastic, but they're not dead like they had been in years past. So there's a market for this. So I think it'll be pretty fantastic when we get there. So moving back to the draft, because that's a whole other pod that we could be talking about on that one. Johnny here pointing out that, you know, specifically about Luke McCaffrey, high on the Raz, the entire draft actually for Washington rated out, according to Kendall Platt, as the highest Raz of this draft. You have Next Gen Stats that also said Washington very high in kind of like these athletic-based scores. The other thing that was noted is most of these picks were captains on their respective teams. Where do you find that to kind of fall in line with some what coaches?
Ready to pop the question and take advantage of 30% off? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com to get 30% off select lab-grown diamonds. That's BlueNile.com for 30% off lab-grown diamonds. BlueNile.com.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
And what teams are looking for is this kind of new, or is this something that's always been? They want captains, they want athletes, essentially.
I think the captain aspect absolutely has been something that has just been kind of hilariously an overly focused thing in the pre-draft process. Not saying that's a bad thing for the Commanders. If you think about it, it makes a lot of sense for it to be good for roster building. You want high character guys. You want guys that are leaders. You want guys that are going to motivate the guys around them and hold them accountable. So it's a good thing, but it's also in a way a cliche, the way I think I would describe it, where it's something that these old school NFL GMs are like, he needs to be X weight. He needs to be a winner in college. He needs to
hand size. X, needs to be, all
right.
That kind of
stuff. Right. The athleticism though has always been important, but I think now more than ever, there's more metrics, there's more analytics, there's more science behind being able to understand what certain thresholds are important for success. And that's why I love Kentley Platt. Like, he's one of the examples, probably the most public example out of anybody. There's other examples that are far less public that are trackable, but his ability to really explain, hey, these are the numbers that certain guys need to hit in order to have long-term success in the NFL. You know, we talk about with offensive linemen, their short area numbers, something that's not talked about. We overemphasize bench press. The short area and even the 40-yard dash, so unuseful. But if you have good short area numbers and you've got quick feet, usually means that you're going to find a way to work in the NFL. And one of the examples I think of is somebody had tweeted, or he had tweeted out Jarvis Landry's RAS score, which was horrible. Like, I don't even think it was like a one. I think it was like less than a one, or it was like a two or something like that. And somebody quote tweeted and was like, oh, it just shows that anybody can make it. And he quote tweeted back and said, no, this is an exception. You know, he's the only person who has succeeded with these terrible physical metrics. So don't think that you're going to see this again. Instead, you need to be in this pocket. So I think that now more than ever, we're able to actually calculate and know which guys work instead of just looking at a guy like Patrick Paul, who's just big and wide and long. But physically, he doesn't move that well, so we're not going to get super, we're not going to be super bought in on a prospect like that.
All right, Joe, my last question for you here. Who are the Giants taking number one overall next year in the 2025 draft?
Do you guys know I'm a Giants fan? Is that why you're asking that?
No idea.
I think that, they need to get a quarterback. I know for a fact that they're going to be picking a quarterback, or at the least they might be a team like the Falcons that might be signing somebody. So if they sign somebody in free agency, James Pierce Jr., somebody I get excited over, or I like Carson Beck and I like Cam Ward. Those are the two quarterbacks that I'm all in on right now.
Wow. Okay.
All right. You hear it first. First overall next year from the New York Giants, the QB. Well, Joe, we appreciate you jumping on. We know you got to bounce here. So again, you can catch Joe on his own Believe Network program, Hack City Football. Where else can they find you?
At Joe DeLeon on X.com. Hack City, the first team, wherever you find podcasts. And guys, I appreciate you having me on. It's going to be a nice slow off season after this week, but I appreciate getting the chance to recount the Commanders draft class.
Absolutely. Excellent. Thanks again, Joe. You have a wonderful night. And we'll have to have you back on next year when Washington's picking in the 20s because we sneak into the playoff with our offensive rookie of the year, like you said, Jaden Daniels.
For sure. Thanks, guys.
All right. Thanks. So moving back into the draft here, there was one question we did hear from him, Justin. So when he talked about Coleman, he said wasn't a starter necessarily. He rates him more as a swing tackle. Not as high on Coleman as probably we would want to have heard. So that was
Coleman
something
is everybody's savior, Nathan, for all the haters like me. They're we got Coleman in third round, he's going to be the guy, he's going to be a stud. And
we honestly I'm in that crew. I'm not saying he's a stud. And there were some interesting stats with him that were put out there. Let me see if I can bring this up because it was of note. It was dealing with the RAS score. So Washington, of course, looking to get, players high on the RAS score. And the Burgundy blog had tweeted out about this. Now, regardless of the context of that tweet itself, Trent Williams scored a 9.53 and Brandon Coleman scored a 9.7. Now, this doesn't mean that Brandon Coleman's going to be Trent Williams, but you can see a lot of similarities in their scores, namely that both work on the smaller side for tackles. They're only listed at 6.4, so that was something there. But all the metrics that you need, and the big point for that would be like the three cone and the shuttle. these are ones that you want. So I know a lot of people were pretty high on Patrick Paul, Washington fans were, but you just heard it from Joe, right? This is a guy who he's massive, but he's not somebody who moves well. So that's why you don't necessarily take a guy like that. And that could have been why, you know, they didn't take Suamataya or Rosengarten, who both, by the way, were in Washington. Those were top 30 guys. And that's where I want to point out over and over again, we wanted them to take a tackle at each of these positions. They chose not to take the tackles that were there.
Yeah.
Now, and so that's why, you know, and this is where we put that trust in Adam Peters and the evaluators, because they're smarter at football than we are.
100%.
And so that's what I just want to point out over and over again. We wanted them to do the thing. They didn't do the thing.
Yeah.
Well, they had the opportunity. So they saw something we're not seeing.
Sure.
And they took a guy in Brandon Coleman at 67, who some people have him as a left tackle. There are some people who have him as a left guard. We just heard from Joe, who said he's a swing tackle.
Mm.
So,
yeah,
it's going to be an interesting thing as far as that's concerned. I am somebody who there, and yes, Gus Bus, this is probably Sam Cosmi might be one of the first players I first started, because you know me, I'm the analytics guy, right? That's my point here in Ref the District. Stoner does a sniff test. I'm all about the numbers, and Sam Cosmi was one of the first ones I looked at, like, for Raz, and I then started doing a deep dive in all this. So I am very high on Raz. I am very high on specific drills and looking at numbers. That's one of the reasons why the Jaden Daniels pick concerns me, right? Was because of the fact that he's never had a season with less than 20% pass to sack ratio. Mm-hmm. That's the line. We talk about three cone drills for offensive linemen and having a line to be successful. Well, to be a QB in the NFL, you have to be under 20%. And the closest he got was 22.
Now's the time to save 30% on wedding jewelry, only on BlueNile.com. Make sure your wedding ring is the one with your pick of diamond and lab-grown diamond bands, all hand-finished and graded for excellence. Or surprise her with something blue she'll love for life, like a stunning pair of sapphire earrings. Blue Nile's jewelry experts are available 24/7 to help, from fit questions to style advice. Right now, get up to 30% off at BlueNile.com. BlueNile.com.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
20.2 is senior year. And so that's where we're now having to hope that he's not Jarvis Landry.
Not a single quarterback in the history of this particular stat, the pressure to sack ratio, who have been over 20% in their college career, not a single one has ever succeeded at the NFL level. And Jaden Daniels is above that number, and they did not address the offensive tackle position to help with the pressure. That's a problem. And you're right, Nathan. They are so much smarter than us. They have so much more information than us. But that's what we do. We stand on the outside and we look at the big picture and we say, are we really going to go into week one with Cornelius Lucas and then Brandon Coleman backing him up and Braden Daniels, who was last year's fourth round pick, who we all hoped would be a left tackle at some point. And
he's always a guard.
Or even guard, in which he was just bad from day one in training camp and then end up getting hurt. And then you're going to have Andrew Wiley with Trent Scott backing him up. That's your plan? From the outside looking in, that's not a great plan. That's not a great position that they're in right now. They could get lucky. It could change. But as I see it right now, that's a problem.
Deluxe. I love this here. Raz can give you a higher ceiling. Tape will help identify the floor. Interview and person decide the fate. That end situation too. I've long said, ever, you know, Stoner Chase panned Chase Young for a long time, said we could have had, you know, who's the
Justin
kid
out Herbert
there? Justin Herbert. And I told him time and time again, Justin Herbert in Washington would not have been the guy he loves out in LA. So the situation, there's a lot that goes into it. And you're absolutely right. It's one of the reasons why the draft is such a lottery. I mean, it is very, very different how things work. Now, Johnny, coming in clutch here is Coleman started 22 games at left tackle the last 2 years combined. He played left tackle. In fact, his 2022 tape was fantastic. He played injured, and they also had to rotate him because of some injuries on the line. But he can play guard, would ball for sure, but he's a unit at left tackle. Don't sleep, and you don't have to sleep either. If you head over to don'tsleepenergy.com, use the code DISTRICT to get yourself 10% off your entire order. They have great merchandise. They're great people, a local company to the DMV, so you can support local. And if you use the code, you support yourself by saving a few dollars there. Don't Sleep Energy makes you great. And I'm telling you, right now I've been having some late nights and early mornings, and I've been needing my Don't Sleep Energy to get me through. So Don't Sleep makes you great. Thanks, Johnny, for that wonderful segue into our ad read for that one. So, yes, TJ, I loved it. When you guys pitch the softball, pitch me those, I will always take them. That's
knock it out of the park.
Fun thing to do for me. Let's get back into the draft. Your favorite pick. You mentioned this with Joe. I don't know that I heard you say this before. I was a little surprised. Yeah. Your favorite pick was 100, Luke McCaffrey.
Yeah. I don't know what there's not to like about him, Nathan. There's everything. Look at his measurables. Look at his RAS scores. Look at his vertical. Just look at his 10-yard, his 20-yard. All of that stuff is off the charts. He's 6'2". He's exactly what this team needed in terms of being a big slot receiver. We advocated, I advocated, in the offseason that they go out in free agency and get one of those big receivers like a Michael Pittman Jr. But they decided not to spend the big money. That's great. And then they drafted one, which I thought is awesome. The bloodlines are there, Jimmy Lee Patterson. The bloodlines are there. Don't shy away from the
nepotism audio mission. Jimmy here is calling out the nepotism.
Yeah, great. I love that. When it's a guy, when your dad was a Super Bowl winning receiver and your brother should have won the MVP of the league.
If MVP wasn't a QB award these years, then he absolutely should have won.
Absolute stud, probably a Hall of Famer, Christian McCaffrey. Even those years he was toiling in Carolina, he was fantastic. So yeah, if that's the guys that you're calling out nepotism on, fine. I'll take that every day. So I love Luke McCaffrey. Is exactly what this team needed. He can actually do some return duties as well. He can play special teams. He's faster than you think. He's 6'2", like I said. His measurables are off the charts. Fantastic pick. My favorite pick of the draft. And I love Sanestrill as well. I love Sinnott as well. And, of course, I mean, we haven't even – I don't even think we've mentioned in terms of the draft pick. We haven't even mentioned Jaden Daniels. And that was obviously a fantastic pick at number two overall.
I think overlooked because of that in that regard. Two. Yeah. So, by the way, Christian McCaffrey was third in voting for the MVP award. Lamar Jackson obviously won it, and Lamar is fantastic. We talk about it being a QB award. Do you remember who came in second?
Who would have come in second, Mahomes or Purdy?
Brock Purdy came in fourth, and that's one of the things I wanted to look at because a lot of people were touting Brock Purdy as MVP, and I didn't think that was right. Mahomes was actually just above C.J. Stroud and behind Tyreek Hill. Dak Prescott was second in MVP.
Hold on, are you looking at the right thing? Come on.
I'm looking. I kid you not.
Get Gus on.
Kid you not.
Did
Dak February 8th, 2024, from Rob Maddie. He tweeted out all the stuff. he's a senior NFL writer, and that's how it broke out. It was crazy. Doug, I do agree with that. As far as nepotism, it's not quite what that word means. Nepotism was Kyle Shanahan getting hired by Mike Shanahan, right? Yeah. Like it's bringing up your own kid in there. This is more when you're drafting a guy like McCaffrey, who, by the way, a lot of people, and I said this in that draft video as well, right? We expected to hear the word Rice being said. Because we all thought Brandon Rice, who is Jerry Rice's son, we had Jerry Rice Jr. here in Washington. That didn't work out. But this guy, 6'2", smooth runner, thought that, hey, this is going to be the one. This is the pick at 100. Brandon Rice kept falling and falling past that. We get Luke McCaffrey out of Rice, which I think does speak volumes to, and I'm going to go back to that RAS score, the kind of similar traits to Nacua, who came out of nowhere seemingly last year and had a heck of a rookie year. And you kind of see some of that from McCaffrey. Do not put that level of expectation on him. Right. I agree with Joe, who we had on. Expect a special teams person. Expect somebody to have what would be a good season, do you think, for Luke McCaffrey? Receiving only.
I mean, yeah, let's not get carried away with a slot receiver when you've got Terry McLaurin, Jahan Dotson, and hopefully a run-first offense with Jaden Daniels at the helm. So, I mean, if he can give you somewhere around 30 catches, right, and a couple hundred yards and maybe a couple of touchdowns, that's what you all you need from your receiver. What you need for him to be is somebody who can move the sticks. Somebody when it's third and four will get you those five tough yards by going over the middle and finding a hole in the zone, something like that. That's what you kind of need to look at from how many first downs can he get for you, which is what Curtis Samuel did a lot, right? Curtis Samuel wouldn't touch the ball a heck of a lot, but when he did, he got you those first downs. Sure. But you need a bigger guy to do that than a Curtis Samuel, which so I was okay with letting him go. Curtis Samuel go as long as you got a big receiver in his place. So let's not get too caught up kind of in just those basic numbers, but get it to the point where he's getting those tough first downs and making plays for you.
Yeah, so someone did ask about RAS. That is relative athletic score. Thanks, Locked On Law, for answering that. But in case you miss it throughout all the chat, that is what it is. So that's your favorite pick. I am eager to find out from our 300 viewers right now that over the three platforms, who was your favorite pick from the Washington Commanders in this NFL draft? Jaden Daniels might be a slam dunk for a lot of people, and that is a good pick there. I know you mentioned Mike Sanistrel was another one that you liked. Jordan McGee, Joe loved that one, and that one is going to be interesting. I know he's a little bit undersized, but that's somebody to kind of mention there. I know Ben Sennett's going to win over a lot of fans. The guy, the way he plays, if all he ends up doing is three catches for 25 yards average a game, people are going to love him, right? Oh, they just need to see one block where he lights somebody up, or one athletic catch, and they're going
to
be.
Now's the time to save 30% on wedding jewelry, only on BlueNile.com. Make sure your wedding ring is the one with your pick of diamond and lab-grown diamond bands, all hand-finished and graded for excellence. Or surprise her with something blue she'll love for life, like a stunning pair of sapphire earrings. Blue Nile's jewelry experts are available 24/7 to help, from fit questions to style advice. Right now, get up to 30% off at BlueNile.com. BlueNile.com.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
All over him in the same way that Adam Peters mentioned from Juice from the 49ers. Because I would say I personally see more of that in him than I see Kittle. It would be great if he could be both. my favorite pick is your least favorite pick, and that's Johnny Newton.
Yeah.
I don't the get it. More and more, I know that you hate it. I think maybe the reason why I do love this pick is because I am so big on best player available. And as Joe mentioned, in this stage of the roster, you just need to take dudes. And this guy is a dude. I had not heard from that of as far as like ruffling people's feathers. That might be the reason why DQ loves him.
Yeah.
Because of that. He's out there on Twitter. He's asking, hey, you know, tell me the lingo and everybody. Everyone's telling him to avoid Ustree. He's like, oh, no, I'm not doing that. I'm here to play foosball. Great conversations happening over on his Twitter account. Seems like a fun rookie, but he is somebody who I think will absolutely be a menace. And I'm looking forward to seeing what Joe Witt Jr. and DQ kind of design to keep them. We had someone mention earlier, I'll see if I've starred this. It doesn't look like I did, they played Jonathan Allen and Daron Payne played 85% of the snaps last year.
Right.
You can't do that. These guys, even though they're in their prime, right? They're in their prime years. They're just under 30. They're physically strong. You know, they've played the game enough to know how to use, you know, their full skill set. Jonathan Allen was ranked as one of the top NFL defensive tackles and top NFL players not that long ago. You know, bringing in Newton allows them to do so many things and be disruptive. I've long said that Jonathan Allen allows Daron Payne to be as disruptive because a lot of people prefer Payne over Allen. It's because people aren't watching. This is where you need your eyes, right? People look at the box score and they see Daron Payne have sacks and they're like, well, he's the better defensive tackle. No, he's getting that because Jonathan Allen has three people trying to block him. You won't be able to put three people on Jonathan Allen and have try to do a double team on Daron Payne and let your running back or a wide receiver take out Andre Jones or KJ Henry. I know we have new people, but my point is that's what was happening last year.
Yeah.
Now you have Newton who can line up and seeing what they're going to do. We've seen that Cinco front, that five man front. And I like Ridgeway. And Mathis is a guy who I feel like we haven't seen the full potential to. Not saying he's ever going to live up to it, but we still haven't seen it. If he starts to live up to that potential, maybe we had something there, but he's gone, right? Mathis is gone. Ridgeway, he's just another guy, right? Like, so now you have three dudes who you're going to put anywhere on the line and cause havoc. I love that pick.
Yeah, you know, and I've said it a couple of times as well. And so if you're new or if you haven't been here from the beginning in terms of the guy, I love Johnny Newton as well. I just don't love the pick. I don't like using that pick at number 36 overall. But look, those guys are smarter than me. But the player itself, love everything about him. Big Ten Defensive Player of the Year, one of a finalist for the Nagurski Award for the best defensive player in all of college football, the only defensive lineman who was up for that award. So, yeah, he's got the bona fides. He's got the resume to be able to come into the NFL and wreak havoc. So that's great, but I just didn't like picking him at 36. If they had let's just say they took him at 36 and then at 40 they took a tackle, right? Now you got my attention. Now I'm not so mad at taking a defensive guy. But to wait all the way until the third round to finally get your tackle and you took a defensive tackle in front of that, that's the issue that I have with it. But my favorite guy, and some people have said it, McCaffrey was one of them, but I also love Sandstrill. I love that pick. He's undersized. I get it. But he's got everything about him. When we talked to Joe DeLeon, when he said that, you know, captaincy is kind of a big deal when you get guys like that. He was a captain. He was the MVP of the Michigan defense, which was the best defense in the country, which was the national champion, right? How can you not love a guy like that? So I'm really happy about that pick as well. So I would go in order. Jaden doesn't count. Daniels, obviously.
Jaden's probably a slam dunk, right?
He's number one, you know, by a long shot. But if you don't count him, I would go McCaffrey 1, then Sandstrill 2, and then Sennett 3.
Yeah, Sanastril is another one that I really, really love. Those first two picks in that second round, I know we wanted offensive tackle. It wasn't until I kind of was looking at the draft overall and seeing how many tackles and how many times Washington chose not to take the guys before Brandon Coleman that, you know, I realized they weren't looking at them, especially the guys they brought in for a top 30, right? And maybe Jordan Morgan was going to be somebody who they wanted at 36, maybe potentially, but then Green Bay took him, which was a little bit of a shock there. But Newton and Sanastril are, I believe, some of the most lights out defending players that are in this draft. I'm really excited to see them. I like Ben Sinnott. I was shocked they took him as high as they did. A lot of people had Sanders out of Texas as rated higher. You know, that's a guy who is very athletic, but doesn't really get the position. Ben Sinnott, though, I think lines up, does everything they want. So I think that one's good. But Jordan McGee is probably the one I'm most interested on the back end. When you're talking about the day three guys, McGee is somebody who I think we will like. It'll be interesting to see what they do with him because he is a little also undersized, but he is full motor. And like this guy will hit. If you like watching Sanastril just run across the field and light somebody up, Jordan McGee will be doing the same thing at just a little bit bigger size. So that one will be pretty good.
All right. I guess so. The guys later on, McGee, Jean-Baptiste, mm-hmm. right? I mean,
Jean-Baptiste and Dominique Hampton.
And Hampton, whatever. These guys, I disrespect anybody who gets drafted fifth round or later. Some of them pop out. Loved Cam Curl, who's a seventh rounder, right? And there are guys who can make plays. Guys like James Smith Williams was a seventh rounder.
Yeah, that's why Jean-Baptiste is worrisome for me. It's like we just got William Bradley King and James Smith Williams, and we just replaced them with another lawyer-like name.
Yeah, and then you had Andre Jones Jr. and KJ Henry, who were late-round picks last year. Mm-hmm. So, you know, don't expect much from them. Just hope that they make the team. Usually draft picks we'll all make the team just to see if you can develop them over the course of time. But yeah, those guys just kind of they're out of sight, out of mind for me right now.
Draft picks tend to make teams not just for development, but because they're recent draft picks, teams tend to have more focus on them. Remember, John Ridgeway was a fifth round pick put on the practice squad that Washington pilfered, right? Because you have recency bias there of being like, oh, that's right. I like that guy. Maybe we can take him and make him into something. So that is one of the reasons why they tend to make the roster. Now, this roster is completely changed from what we had last year. Last year, winning four games and able to pick Jaden Daniels. So you can also put that one on Sam Howell, Stoner. Why that was a good pick for Washington because it landed Jaden Daniels. But this roster, seeing nearly 40 different names on it, an insane amount of turnover, and we'll be talking about that here in the cooldown.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, didn't see that coming, and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.